Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today has been one of the most influential and important people in Tulsa's literary community. Teresa Miller has provided a platform for countless local, regional, and national writers and has been a proponent for literature and writers as the executive producer and host of Writing Out Loud on public television and the Oklahoma Center for Poets and Writers at OSU Tulsa, which she founded in 1994. Miller, a writer herself and the author of two novels, Remnants of Glory and Family Correspondence, and what she calls an embellished memoir, Means of Transit, stepped down from the center and from teaching creative writing at Oklahoma State University earlier this month to devote her full time to writing. As director of the Center for Poets and Writers, Miller has brought in a wide range of incredibly talented writers to this city, from Pat Conroy and Maya Angelou to Neil Gaiman and most recently Sue Monk Kidd. She also helped establish the Tulsa Reads program, and she joins us today to look back at her work on behalf of Tulsa's literary community and to look ahead to her own literary work in the future. Teresa Miller is my guest today. Teresa Miller, welcome back to Studio Tulsa, and congratulations on everything you've done for the writing community. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rich. It's great to be here. And thank you for your support all these years.
And as we speak, you're leaving a big hole in the writing community. And I have to tell you, when we think of who's done the most to encourage people to read and to write, but also as readers, I really think you're one of the most important people in this community through Writing Out Loud from the Oklahoma Center for Poets and Writers. You've been remarkably democratic in your choice of guests. You know, I mean, because it would be, you know, highfalutin literary lions, and then you're just your average guy that's written a book.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say. I've been incredibly lucky to get to do it, Rich. I've got to tell you that this is my fantasy fulfillment. When I started out as a writer and I thought I had this great writing career ahead of me when I was in my 20s and then developed writer's block. And I thought, what can I do with my life? What can I do with all these needs to read and to connect with writers? And then, you know, the center was born out of that need. And then the television show was born out of that need. So, you know, how good can it get? If you can't do your first love, that at least you come close to it for a while.
Well, when you look at the community today, there's, you know, everything from what Jeff Martin's doing with Booksmart Tulsa, what you're doing with your big events over the last few years, but prior to that, the big conference that you would have every year and then every other year.
But you participated in a lot.
Well, I appreciate that, but I think it's gotten people more interested in being at literary events, and people want to talk about books together.
Oh, I love to hear you say that. That would certainly be something that I could feel very proud of in my life and gratified. And I think it's important because I think books serve a bigger role than just escape or entertainment or being some sort of solitary activity that we, you know, hole away with our books and read. And I guess I see books bringing us together and giving us a chance to, you know, enlarge our thinking, broaden our hearts, so maybe help us build a better community, if that's not too far afield there. But I do think it's possible. That's the idealist in me coming out.
Well, take us back to when you mentioned, you know, I was a writer and I got writer's block and I couldn't put anything on paper, which must be horrifying. But
horrifying for my agents, too.
So what got you interested in talking about writers as opposed to being a writer yourself? What do you think it was? You were a teacher at the time, weren't
you? Well, I was a teacher, and I was over at Rogers State, and they had a little TV station there, and they asked us to do special projects. And so I tried to think of a special project that I could do that would not be a burden, but that would actually enrich my life in some way. And that's where talking to writers was so helpful to me. And I had met a lot of wonderful writers. When I wrote the first novel, I went to New York. I met people like Alice Munro. And so I knew these people, and I missed the conversations desperately. And that a part of me, Rich, was looking for answers. I thought maybe by talking to these writers, I can find out if there's some magic rule that would help me. But you know, what was it? Somerset Maugham said there are only three rules to writing a novel, but no one knows what they are. And so I guess I was hoping for those three rules, which I never found. But in the process of talking to all these writers, I've met some extraordinary people. And not just the famous writers, we tend to focus on those, but some of the most enlightening writers I've visited with are people who aren't household names, people who work very hard to tell their stories. And I think one of the things I've learned through writing out loud, through my work at the center, is that most people have very important stories to tell, but a lot of them don't realize it yet. And so I hope that one of the, you know, results of the show, that not something that we intentionally plan, but I hope that one of the results of the show is that more people have felt empowered to tell their stories. This was before the days of StoryCorps when, you know, we recognize that.
Right.
Recognize that more now.
We should mention you're not only stepping down from the Oklahoma Center for Poets and Writers, but you're also stepping down from hosting and producing Writing Out Loud.
Oh, yeah. That's tough.
I would think that would be a tough decision because
It is.
It looks like it's a lot of fun. I'm sure there's a lot of work involved. But
We've had some stresses over the years. You know very well from doing your own show that, you know, it doesn't always go as beautifully as we would like. But for the most part, it's been an extraordinary experience. We've met some wonderful people, and we've discovered that most people are incredibly generous in spirit and with their time and with their talent and love doing. I say we. I had two guys that worked with me, Gary Johns, Rick Eggers, for years, and we would, you know, be holed up in these little hotel rooms with these famous people and not so famous people. And it was just an extraordinary and really very intimate experience where you just felt like you're – Like we are here, just you're talking to someone.
Now, tell me about how that program started. It started at Rogers Estate originally.
Yeah.
And maybe low budget would have been a compliment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was so low budget that we had our set furniture, and these were live 15-minute segments when we started. We had lawn furniture without any cushions in it. And I remember my first guest, and she was a lovely children's author named Bessie Holland Heck. And after it was over, she was a very blunt woman, and she said, "Teresa, you better get some new furniture. Your guests are going to get waffle butt from sitting on these chairs." And she had a very valid point. So we got a little bit more upscale over the years. And we taped one of the things that saved the show. Probably about 8 years ago, we started taping on location more. And we found so many places around town and in Tulsa and then in Oklahoma City and just basically anywhere that we went, people were very happy to share space with us. And so we took it out of the studio and took it to hotels, places that were convenient for writers to come. We would do it in auditoriums. We'd do it in, you know, at universities and offices. And we had a lovely time. Did some outdoor shooting, but not as much because you're so vulnerable to all the sounds and
wind.
Wind and all the different things that, you know, you just can't anticipate ahead of time.
Right. Well, through those years, I was surprised to learn we've been doing our shows the same number of years. Mm-hmm. 1992 is when you started Writing Out Loud, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who were some of the most fascinating guests, you think, over
those
years?
We've had so many. I was trying to think. We've done, over 500 shows. And, of course, a lot of those were repeats with some of our favorite guests. But, you know, a lot of local authors like Susie Hinton. I was just amazed at all the wonderful writers we have here in Oklahoma. That was an ongoing revelation for me. I think when we first started the show, we thought we'd do a series on Oklahoma writers, and we thought we'd do maybe...
And then you do them all.
Yeah, yeah. And then we found out, you know, we thought we'd do 5 to 10 shows, and that would cover it. And then we realized that... And one of my frustrations now is that we just scratched the surface, that there's so many wonderful writers out there. But over the years, just some great, great guests. I always enjoyed especially interviewing Wilma Mankiller because she was so comfortable in her own skin. There was no pretense about her, and she would come on and she would just share in such an open way. And I remember one day she was on the show and she had a cold and she just came on with her Kleenex. She wasn't worried about how she looked, and she'd dab her nose from time to time. But in between those moments, she gave some of the richest insights into everyday life of anybody we ever had on the program.
Did you get to interview a few heroes over the years?
Oh, gosh. Yes, absolutely. Some I didn't get to interview, but I'm a huge fan of Pat Conroy's, and so got to interview Pat, and that was a thrill. And then, you know, people
I've interviewed Pat Conroy too, and it's not so much you interview him, you share the stage with him.
Yeah. Oh, you do, which is great. You know, that is so
That's the easiest interview in the world. You say, thanks for joining us. And then you say, all right, well, we're out of time.
The hardest interview, one of the hardest I ever had to do was with Edward Albee. And it's not because he was difficult, but he's basically a very shy man. And so we had set aside a full hour because here's this, you know, multi-Pulitzer winner and icon. We had to get all these, we had all these questions to ask. And he would give me one and two word answers. Oh, my goodness. And so we had all this time to fill. And so we found video clips from the films and we were able to. But I was so frustrated. I was pulling teeth that day. But he was certainly somebody that I learned a lot. Jim Lehrer actually taught me a very important lesson during the course of the interview. He was talking about how when he was starting out interviewing, that he got so preoccupied with the questions that if the interview, if his interviewee gave a great startling declaration of some kind, that instead of responding to that, he'd just go on to the next question. And so I realized just in that moment that that was exactly what I was doing. And he had guided me very gently into just relaxing a little bit and going with the flow of the conversation. I think initially when I was interviewing particularly very famous people and people in broadcasting, that's scary. I mean, I interviewed Dan Rather, and you get with all these guys, it gets pretty scary, that I was so afraid of not covering all the bases that I didn't look for the opportunities that were right there with me. And so I think gradually over the years, I got to be a little bit more relaxed.
Conversational.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because really that's the best part of an interview is when you feel like you're sort of overhearing a wonderful conversation at the table next to you at a restaurant or something like that.
Oh, yes.
And that's the beauty of a wonderful interview.
Well, you know, and that happened recently. This was my last interview, at least for a while, before we get into the specials with Sue Monk Kidd. And we're talking, we're doing the interview, and she gets so relaxed, she forgets herself as well. And then as we're going along, she said, well, I'm going to tell you what my new book is about, but we're not supposed to tell because it's not going to be a release for a few weeks. And then she just goes on and she tells us about this new, very controversial subject that she's writing. Now, you don't think of Writing Out Loud as a show where there's breaking news, but we will have a scoop with the special airs, this special segment we did with Sue airs in November. We do actually have a scoop probably for the first time in Writing Out Loud history.
Now, you mentioned Jim Lehrer a moment ago, and Jim Lehrer is very much instrumental in your success, I really believe. And when you left Roger State to go to OSU Tulsa and form the Center for Poets and Writers.
Oh, yeah. With that, we moved, first of all, to UCAT. We've been through all the transitions. We've been everything. They used to call us, Rich, the Traveling Center for Poets and Writers. And then we would have to avoid, you know, all of the different, any kind of legal ramifications. So we'd change the name slightly. It's sort of like all the different Baptist churches in Tahlequah, my home time. So it'd be Reorganized Center of Oklahoma Center for Poets and Writers, the new Center for Oklahoma Writers. But Jim was the first high-profile guest that we ever had. And when I was in Claremore, I invited him to come to the first conference that I ever did. And he wrote back, and I told him we couldn't offer him any money or anything. We could, you know, coach airfare. And he wrote back, and he said he would come on the condition that he wouldn't have to stay in the Elm Motel. Well, there is an Elm Motel in Claremore. Now, it's, I'm sure, a wonderful establishment today, but how does he know about the Elm Motel? Well, he was to tell me later. That was one of the first questions I wanted to ask him off the record, and he said his father had been a bus driver, and he got free bus passage on, you know, bus routes from Kansas all through Oklahoma, so he knew all the routes, all the motels, everything. But when he came, what he did was give us credibility. And that was so important. And so then whenever we reached out to anybody else, we could say, well, they say, who's been there before? We say, Jim Lehrer. And he was sort of the gold standard because not only is he a very accomplished writer and journalist, but he's known for his integrity. And so it was sort of like the good housekeeping seal of approval.
So what do you think the connection was there?
He loves to talk about writing. More than journalism, more than presidential debates, more than anything, he loves to talk about fiction writing, and he's really considers himself, first and foremost, a storyteller. So that was key. And I tell you, this was really a wonderful thing that he did, was during one of the presidential elections, he was scheduled to come and be one of our keynote speakers. And he learned about 4 days before he was to come that he was to moderate a presidential debate in Boston 2 days after he was scheduled to be in Tulsa. Well, huge pressure. He hadn't prepared. I mean, you know, enormous. And so at first he called me and he said, do you think you can make it without me? And I said, of course we can under the circumstances. No, that called me back And then he said, you know, he said, I gave you my word, and I'm coming anyway. Wow. So he came here and then left from here to Boston to prep for the interview. So he's not only a man of words, he's a man of his word.
You know, it's interesting. He actually wrote a book about how a moderator helps throw an election.
Wasn't that? Debate, I loved that book. Yeah. And, you know, you wonder how much of it's true. But no, he is so straight, you know, on what he does. And so fair in everything that he does. One of the things, though, that I learned from him was I would often ask myself, because he's been to Tulsa for our events probably 8 or 9 times over the years, and I've stayed in touch with him. And he's just been a wonderful mentor and role model to me. And I don't mean so much just in his wonderful presence on screen and his wonderful writing, but as a human being and the character of the man. And so I've tried to keep that in mind throughout my own life. Now, I don't live up to that, but I try to keep it in mind.
My guest today is Teresa Miller, who is the newly retired executive director of the Oklahoma Center for Poets and Writers at OSU Tulsa, host and producer of Writing Out Loud. And it's going to be not a loss for the writing community, but a loss for, at least for those roles you played, because it was so important to a body of readers and writers. And we wish you great success with and you're going to focus on writing, right?
Yes, I got an opportunity. I mentioned earlier that my first book, I have so much support. I had 2 agents. I had people like David Susskind interested in it. It was going to be the American Thornbirds. Well, it didn't quite live up to that, but it did well. It did well. So the thing that my agent looked for, everybody looked for, was that next book. This was going to be my breakout book. And I was in my late 20s, and as I say, I froze. And so for years, I think part of the reason for that is I needed to grow into my voice, and I needed to own my words. And so I've written some other books since, a novel, a memoir.
A memoir of the writer's block.
Of the writer's block, yeah. And maybe that helped me a little bit. But recently, a good friend of mine who is a writer has his own imprint, and he invited me to write a novel for it. And I did it probably just out of respect for him more than anything else. And I really didn't think anything would come of it. You've interviewed so many writers. You've heard us all say we didn't think anything would come of it. And I waited and waited after I'd sent the first third in, and I got a call on my birthday that they were going with it. Well, that's wonderful, except that means
I got to finish the book.
Yeah, Rich, you know just exactly where my mind is going. And so that's been factored into this decision of mine that I've always told my students for years that writing is a job. It's not just a hobby. It's a job. And so I thought if I'm really going to do justice to this man who's put so much faith in me and who's giving me this chance, then I really have to make writing a priority in my life again. And it's scary. I mean, it's scary. I hope I can do it. But I'm very excited.
Now, can you tell us who that man is?
Pat Conroy.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So you can see why I'm scared. I want to lead, you know, and I'm going to be going to get to South Carolina next spring or late winter and spending some time doing the revisions on it. But he's been very much an encourager of writers throughout his life. His agent told me once that he is absolutely one of those few writers who's never jealous of anybody else's success. He just truly cherishes and celebrates anybody who has an opportunity, and he understands a lot of, you know, the struggles that I've had. And most veteran writers are haunted by writers like me who had that long dry spell, because it's something every writer fears, and it just in my case it happened. It really happened.
Can you tell us anything about the book at this point, or is it too soon?
Well, it's probably too soon to know how it'll ultimately work out. As I say, I just have a third of it done. But the wonderful part about it is that for me, I'm going back to my roots. One of the things Pat's encouraged me to do is to embrace your own story, even in fiction.
Certainly he has.
He has, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think I wasted a lot of time in my life trying to cover up the real-life elements of my life that I was putting into fiction, and maybe it was about 20 removes from the story, but it was still partially my story. So I'm writing a novel, a contemporary novel set in Tahlequah, and it's about bearing witness and how we need to bear witness and stand up and acknowledge some of the things that we see, no matter how painful that can be for us.
Now, I look forward to seeing what that ends up being.
Me too. yeah, I'm excited about it.
Do you have a publish, publication date sort of in mind, or is it like 2017? Or
well, that's what we're what I would hope for, because I don't want it to go on too much older. You know, when I'm too much older, I would love to get it going. But I think that's the most realistic, to finish it in 2016 and be ready to go in 2017. I think, though, even as I say that, I've rushed a couple of books. I rushed my second novel. I was so happy to be writing again that I want to be careful not to take any shortcuts with this book. And one of the, another lesson, there's so many lessons that I've gotten from Pat, is dig deeper, you know, always be digging deeper. Don't take the easy way out. And sometimes that takes more time than you planned, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be exhilarating. And that's how I wrote my first book. I was a full-time writer. And then I did the teaching in this long detour. But now that's where I'm coming back to that time.
I would imagine as a writer, you're always hearing wonderful advice from these writers. What are some of the pieces of advice that have stuck most closely to you, along with what Pat said?
You know, I think there's been a lot over the years. One piece of advice that came to me most recently, I was talking to Elizabeth Haley, and we met when I was working on my first book. She wrote A Woman of Independent Means and several best-selling novels. And she said, you know, in the old days, it was sort of the mantra of writers that, you know, leave me alone, I'm writing, you can't be disturbed. And, you know, obviously you have to set aside time for your writing. But she said, you know, don't, she's visiting prisoners who are in solitary confinement, and she said, don't put yourself in solitary confinement to write, that writing's about living, it's not about totally holing away. And I thought that is really good life advice, because, you know, I think that she's absolutely right. I think I need to set aside time for my writing, but I do think it's important not just to become a total writing hermit.
I can't remember the guest that once told me, said, you know, what her process of writing was, and she said it was the Bic method. I go, the Bic, like Bic pen? No, she says, Bic, butt in chair.
Well, and you know, that's absolutely true. And just recently when Sue Monk Kidd was here, she said, you know, so many failed novels are failure in courage, that you just get scared, you think it can't do it. And so, you know, I have to tell myself, that really resonated with me, because as I thought back, I thought, you know, I believe the novel I tried to write right after my first novel, Remnants of Glory, was a failure in courage. I just got scared and couldn't do it. And so now I'm telling myself, you know, this is just fear that's holding you back. It's not a lack of ability. It's, you know, a lack of courage. And somehow that makes it easier. So I think about that all the time. And this new novel's in layers. There's a memoir embedded within it. But, you know, every time I get too intimidated by the scope of my book, I'm reminded of the nonfiction book, The History of God, and how that writer must have felt sitting behind the computer, The History of God. So I think, Rich, in comparison, my work seems quite small.
Little story about Tahlequah.
Little story about Tahlequah. Yeah, we're not getting into that big universal history of the biography of God.
My guest today is Teresa Miller. You've see her as host and producer of Writing Out Loud. You've perhaps been to many of her events for the Oklahoma Center for Poets and Writers. She's hanging those up to concentrate on writing, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. And as I mentioned, I've had so many people said, oh, you're going to talk to, oh, you need to talk to Teresa Miller about this, because
this
is
nice.
So, it's important because you know, when you had the big festival, those were tremendous events where you had all these writers coming in. I know that just practically wore you to a nub, and that's why those ended. But those were really tremendous events for the readers and writers community in the city.
There was a wonderful synergy that came from having all these great people together. I think at our last celebration of books, we had, you know, people like Carlotta Walls Lanier, who was the youngest of the Little Rock Nine. We had Rita Dove, Pulitzer winner, first African-American woman to be poet laureate of the United States. We had Michael Cunningham, and Sue Monk Kidd was here then, and Jim Lehrer. And it was almost an embarrassment of riches. We had so many here. And actually, my thinking was more than weariness on my part was when everybody left after that last conference, which was so great, I thought, we missed so much. I mean, all these great people were here, and we just got little glimpses of them. And so I wanted, you know, as I was winding down my thinking, maybe looking ahead to doing some writing at some point, what can we do to concentrate more on individual writers, which is what led to Tulsa Reads and our collaboration with that, where, you know, we would get people together, you know, focusing not on just one book by a writer, but a writer's whole body of work. And really, so I went from one extreme to the other, extreme focus. And I like that. I think that's been rewarding, too. But I'm with everybody. I enjoyed the excitement of the celebration of books. It was fun, you know, being out and go in the restaurant, the little subway there, and there's Jim Lehrer, there's Earl Hamner, who created the Waltons. I have a special affection for Earl Hamner because when I was a child growing up in Tahlequah and very dysfunctional family, we could watch any show we wanted on TV except the Waltons. And my grandmother said, "We are such a dysfunctional family that I don't want you watching the Waltons because watching such a happy family will give you false expectations." Plus, put pressure on all the rest of the family, you know, to live up to a certain standard. Well, this became the thing I sort of did surreptitiously. I would slip into my room and be watching the Waltons. And my grandmother came in one day and she said, "Have you been watching the Waltons?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And then I flipped it to the Mod Squad and she said, "That's more like it." There was a drug bust going down. So I just had to meet the Waltons. And so I got, you know, called Earl and got to visit with him. And, you know, so much of my early life, even as a kid, I was reaching out to writers. And this is one of my favorite writer experiences, very limited, and yet it's embarrassing. In Tahlequah, we had, you know, phone operators when I was growing up. Did you remember that era?
Yeah.
You know, you'd get the operator, and it was very informal. I mean, one operator was calling my grandmother when I was a little girl, and she said, "I know you're going to be in the recital. Will you play Silent Night for me before we finish the call?" And I said, "Sure." And you know, that was the pace then. But when I was in college, I thought, I have to talk to Harper Lee. So I called the operator, information operator in Monroeville, Alabama, and I said, "Can you give me the number for Harper Lee?" And she paused for a moment and she said, "Honey, Harper's number's unlisted, but she lives with her sister Alice, and I'll give you Alice's number." So I called Alice and then got Harper, and we had a conversation that I was totally embarrassed later and am now, even as I tell the story. But Harper Lee and Earl Hamner and so many of the Southern writers. It was interesting when Pat first came to a conference in 2006, he said, "Who are some of the writers that are going to be here?" And I mentioned Earl Hamner, and he said, "Are you kidding? Of all the writers who were here, that was the most exciting for him, too," because he came from a dysfunctional family. And he said the part of the show that always got to him when they were saying, "Good night, so-and-so, good night," in their home, it wasn't nearly as polite as that. And I'm not going to, you know, repeat some of the expletives, but blankety-blank, you know, Pat, blankety-blank, you know, Donald, and so forth. So Earl is kind of the hero of dysfunctional people.
Well, we wish you great success with the writing career. We're going to miss those wonderful events. And I have to ask you, you know, you just finished this event with Sue Monk Kidd.
Yeah.
You obviously knew going in this is going to be the last one. Was it a little bittersweet?
It was, but, you know, I tried not to think about it, and the focus was on her the whole time. I didn't even mention it during the event, but sure it was. And then we had Neil Gaiman in March, and I knew then. And I thought, I'm just going to relish the moment. And I'm still going to be doing some projects in Tulsa. I've got some things in the works. I don't want to, as I say, announce it yet. But I've got some things coming up that I'll be doing in Tulsa. So I'll still keep in the game just a little bit. But
So it'll be more along the lines of writing out loud specials or
writing
something?
Out loud specials and maybe being involved with some literary things from time to time and keeping in it. It's hard to cut it off entirely. But the main difference for me now is that writing is my number one job. And, you know, in the old days when I would say that and I'd be at home, people would come knock on the door and they'd say, "Can we talk to Teresa?" And my grandmother would say, "She's writing," and then they could come in and say, "Well, good, we're not disturbing anything." And so what I've got to, you know, tell myself, and because there are a lot of fun things I want to do, and what I've got to tell myself is that writing, this is a job and I'm taking it very seriously. So right now, my number one job is being a writer. And it's a scary one because I don't know if I can succeed at it or not, but I know I've got to try.
I'm sure we'll be talking to you a year or so down the road about that new book.
Oh, yeah, one way or the other. Thank you, Rich.
Well, Teresa, thanks very much for joining us. Teresa Miller speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She recently stepped down as the director of the Oklahoma Center for Poets and Writers and as host and executive producer of her public television program, Writing Out Loud. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.